The recent earthquakes and aftershocks in Southern California demonstrate once again how much we want to know about earthquakes in real time, in advance, if possible. A little warning goes a long way when a hazardous situation develops, which is exactly why there is such a thing as the Hazards Lab at the University of Oregon. Every month we visit with the U of O to learn about projects in the works in a segment we call Curious, Research Meets Radio. This month, we visit once again with Leland O'Driscoll, seismic field technician at the Hazards Lab. Leland joined us 2 years ago to talk about the shake alert system, and we welcome him back for a progress report on shake alert and news of another project, Alert Wildfire. Leland, thanks for joining us once again.
Yeah, hi, Jeffrey. Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Well, as a seismic field technician, did you spend some time looking at the California information over the weekend?
Oh, yeah, of course. There were quite a few successful shake alerts that were generated by the event. I mean, every time there's a magnitude 3.5 or higher, the system can produce a shake alert.
And so talk about how it works and then talk about how it worked relative to what the expectations were.
Yeah, well, so shake alert in a nutshell, it relies upon the 24/7 seismic monitoring network that's out there. And as soon as an earthquake happens, three or four sensors will detect the earthquake, and within a matter of seconds, all of that's processed, the earthquake is characterized, and the USGS server system can generate an alert to say, hey, an earthquake just happened, and it's about to spread throughout the region.
And so that gives, some warning to people if they haven't felt the shaking themselves yet? Does it get there that fast?
Yeah, and that's indeed why it's called early warning, because the earthquakes travel slow, i.e., sort of the speed of an airplane, say, the internet can send down information in a matter of seconds. So if you're sitting there 50 miles away from an earthquake epicenter, that whole process works way faster than the earthquake would travel through the earth. And so you can get seconds to tens of seconds of advance warning before shaking happens.
And so relative to expectations, how well did shake alert work in Southern California on Friday and through the weekend?
Yeah, well, the system itself worked quite well, the shake alert system, and it performed nearly flawlessly for those local earthquakes. The big dust-up about the area was there's a phone application that's public and live in Los Angeles. It's called Shake Alert LA, and anybody from the public can get it. But the alert thresholds were too low for the app to be able to use it locally in the Los Angeles area. So there was some confusion that Shake Alert didn't work, but it did quite well. It was just limitations of the phone app.
So Shake Alert is connected to Shake Alert LA?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Shake Alert is the brains behind the phone application called Shake Alert LA, similar to phone apps that we'll be seeing rolling out to the north in the coming years.
So there are going to be different names then for Shake Alert, it sounds like, from place to place, or different names for the apps anyway.
Yeah, for the apps indeed. There's a new one led out of the University of California, Berkeley, called MyShake that has a similar sort of mode where it uses the Shake Alert system as a core, and it's just yet another way to broadcast the Shake Alerts themselves.
But that's high praise then, to say that the system itself worked nearly flawlessly.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay. So, given the test you'd had for it, were there any particular surprises?
Well, not necessarily. I came into my Shake Alert monitor this morning, and I could see numerous events that came through in our user display software, which we use internally for testing. So, by all signs, it's the system's up and running, and it's ready for us here up north in Oregon.
Do the apps let people give any feedback? Did anybody, have you heard any stories, anecdotes from people back saying, hey, you saved me a couple seconds, a shelf fell right where I was, or anything like that?
Well, we'll see that through Twitter accounts. Mm-hmm. And mostly, for the public, it's the Shake Alert LA app, and they didn't get the warning. So most of the feedback was, why didn't I get the warning? But you'll see, if you follow the USGS Shake Alert account, you'll see some nice feedback and discussion about the technology and its usefulness.
So how is that bug with Shake Alert LA corrected? Is that easily taken care of?
Well, it's a technological problem and sort of an administrative problem. The USGS wanted to be careful in deploying levels of alerts. So in this case, the app is only allowing notification of a shaking intensity of 4, so sort of light shaking. And it turns out people can feel, modified Mercalli intensity scale of 3 or so. And so there's sort of a push to try to lower that threshold of alerting, because, you know, when there's an earthquake, there's a region surrounding it that's expected to feel a certain level of shaking. And so you can pursue a problem called geofencing, where you can say everything inside of that area, let's send out that alert.
And what is the information that people then receive then from Shake Alert?
Well, so for the public, what you see is a message that says an earthquake has happened, expect shaking soon, and there's instruction to drop cover and hold on. And that's the extent of the publicly delivered information to date. Institutional users that are using it for their own purposes get more information than that.
So there's no information on magnitude for the public user?
Yeah, not at this current mode of operation.
So whether it you know hits the threshold above 4 or whether it's up to a 7, they're not going to see anything different in the information.
No, and that's, you know, there's an education campaign that really needs to happen, because it's one thing for an earthquake to be a certain size, but it really depends how far the user is away from the earthquake, according to how much shaking they would feel in the end.
Leland O'Driscoll, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, he's a seismic field technician at the University of Oregon Hazards Lab and also the Shake Alert Project Manager for the U of O. We're also talking about coming up something called Alert Wildfire. Questions, comments, welcome on the Jefferson Exchange as we talk about early warning systems for hazards. 800-838-3760 to join by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So give us a broader view then of the Oregon Hazards Lab. It's obviously more than just seismic events. I mean, how many different kinds of hazards are we looking at?
Well, to date, what we're really pursuing is the earthquake problem, but also now the fire problem. There's a common sort of basis of what we do. We put sensors out there in the wilderness areas, and we have to find a way to get that data back to our processing centers in a live, real-time mode. So what we've done in expanding from the seismic monitoring network is to essentially now deploy the Alert Wildfire system in Oregon and surrounding states. And it's essentially a modern 21st century lookout tower system where we deploy cameras on the tops of mountaintops on tower structures. And those have a live feed over the landscape, which allows the public to see what's going on out there in the lands, but most importantly, allows for first responders and firefighters to discover and confirm fire ignitions, monitor events as they happen, and really help to generally protect through firestorms, help with evacuations if necessary, and sort of watch blazes until they're fully contained.
This sounds like it's a lot more intervention involved from humans. It's not quite the same way that Shake Alert works in the sense that it's automatic.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, really all of those people out there on the ground fighting the fires with their bare hands or through technology, they're doing the work, right? So all we're really doing is putting an extra useful tool in the command center's hands to give better situational awareness to all that hard work that's taking place out there on the landscape.
Alert Wildfire started where, Leland?
Well, it started in the Lake Tahoe Basin, led by the University of Nevada, Reno. And there, you know, you have these great mountaintops architecture surrounding the lake. And so to start by putting up cameras there on ski resorts with private organizations, you get this great viewshed coverage there where you have multiple cameras looking all over the same landscape at once. That really demonstrated the functionality of having a microwave wireless connected system and bringing all that data down to the main processing center in Reno. And since then, it's expanded quickly into Nevada, and the large utilities are now really jumping on board in California, and you see them up and down the state now. Hundreds of cameras are up and running, and it's really catching momentum.
So it sounds like it's a physical expansion north and west from Nevada.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the leads there, Dr. Graham Kent, has been through multiple fires. I mean, he's had nearly two houses burned over between his time in San Diego and Nevada. And, sort of time was up, to sort of just look at earthquakes and sort of push on to multi-hazards and really do something to fight this big problem we're having here.
So, but we're talking cameras here, and not seismic sensors. So there's some really different hardware. It's not, in other words, there's not a lot of overlap between the two systems, between Shake Alert and Alert Wildfire, it sounds like.
Well, there's a key uniting principle in having a wireless data connection. So we have a sensor on site at times, and we have a camera up on a tower, and both of those things that are generating data, the camera and the seismic sensor, can come back on the wireless radio links. So they're perfectly complementary systems. They just have different end goals in the end.
You mentioned the microwave part of all this. Is this a system that is getting less used from things like broadcasting and telephone companies, or more over time? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out if you're finding some excess capacity that you're able to take up through the use of the alert systems.
Yeah, you know, there's parts of the radio frequency spectrum that are reserved for public safety. And that's primarily where we occupy the radio space. There's also some unlicensed band, but as you know, technology becomes more and more dependent on wireless, and the cell carriers start to look for more and more of that space, it starts to threaten some of the usefulness of the radio spectrum we can use. So we have to sort of be careful to, you know, be in the unused bands and make sure to avoid interference for other critical public safety features.
Have you had to move to different radio bands at various times because of the wireless communications?
It's not quite at that point yet. Mm-hmm. Historically that's happened over time, and we've had to move some seismic bands, say, but we currently are using the public safety band 4.9 gigahertz, and there's ruminations of that being sold out, and so that's a problem we're anticipating and trying to come up with solutions for ahead of time.
Yeah, sorry, I geek out on the audience there. I just get interested because there are times when we've talked about TV and radio occupying different bands from what they used to. It has happened to the FM band in the United States, although many decades ago. Leland O'Driscoll is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange in this month's edition of Curious, Research Meets Radio, our project with the University of Oregon, where he works in the Hazards Lab. He's a seismic field technician and the project manager for Shake Alert, the University of Oregon version of it. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange. Questions about Alert Wildfire or Shake Alert, welcome at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Is Alert Wildfire then meant more for the public or for people involved in fighting fires, or basically in the age of all information all the time, is that not really a distinction made anymore?
Oh, that's a good point there at the end. The primary point really is for first responders. So the Alert Wildfire has a great public-facing web page where you can see what the camera has been looking at. But when an actual event happens, that a select few can actually log on to the cameras and control it as they need to. And so, while it does have a nice view that's facing for the public, and where you can play back time-lapse imagery, for example, it's really meant for those first responders who need to know where to put their trucks, where to fly their choppers, and where to start positioning crews.
And so these are particular kinds of cameras, and they're not just bolted to a tower facing one direction all the time.
Yeah, they're fully telescoping, so they're pan, tilt, and zoom technology with up to 30 times optical zoom. So they have quite good resolution. And, you know, the key thing that we need to really push against is getting enough cameras out so we can really see enough of the terrain in the rugged topography that we have here in Oregon.
These are not very specialized cameras. I mean, pan, tilt, zoom, I mean, these are things that cameras do with the right kinds of mountings and the right kinds of lenses, but are they particularly expensive? I mean, it seems like we keep getting into high def, ultra high def, ultra, ultra high def.
Well, the price point comes down to a few thousand dollars now. And they're very nicely weatherproof, so that's sort of one of the key things, is they can sort of ride throughout the annual cycle of the elements out there. So it's the key thing is really the positioning of them, and the brains behind Alert Wildfire is the software that takes place once that video comes back. It's being able to play back the time-lapse imagery to make videos out of that over time, so you can actually track fires. And as we look down the road in the future, the application of artificial intelligence will become a factor as well.
Well, I guess that was a question we were going to end up at anyway, but at some point we're talking about interpretation from something other than humans potentially, and then perhaps scrambling of crews and things like that based on AI giving the go-ahead.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and there's, you know, there's simple versions of it now where you can compare one version against the other. And in fact, that's what the Oregon Department of Forestry system does. They have an internal camera system where it just looks around and it scans and looks at differences. And then a specialist that's sitting in their command center can actually look and see, is that a smoke? Is it dust? Is it a cloud? And start to identify fires in that sense. The Alert Wildfire program we're building out is going to be complementary to what exists now with the Department of Forestry.
So I noticed that there are some cameras already deployed across Oregon, and again, it tends to move, you know, generally radiating out from Nevada where the system began, but do you have many posted in Oregon thus far?
There's four to date. So we're working with the BLM out in the eastern part of the state to look over the sort of sage habitat out there in the southeast. We have one right up above Eugene right now, and we're looking to build two more this summer to connect with that. And importantly, in your guys' viewer area here, we're looking at a pilot project up on Mount Ashland to just sort of demonstrate the project and start to build our user consortium down in the area.
Okay, so this is that people will be able to. People can go online and look at Alert Wildfire's cameras now, right?
Yeah, if you go to alertwildfire.org, you can see all the cameras that are out there. You can look at the large video image and right-click on it and play back time lapse, and kind of pan through all the pages to get a sense of where things lie. And you'll see there's a few stations out west of Redding that would be interesting for a lot of your listeners here to take a look at.
Okay, so right-click is when you get the other features. Okay, that is good to know. That was something I didn't do when I was on there last week. How's the funding for these projects, Leland? It sounds like you get some bursts of public funding here and there, but perhaps not enough to get a truly robust system going yet.
Yeah, it depends. So unlike our seismic funding that comes from federal grants, the Alert Wildfire Program comes in bursts and bits here and there. So we have some funding from BLM to deploy some cameras. Private groups can buy in. But what we've really seen is the model where the large utilities come in and put in big contracts to do large volume deployments. And that's indeed what we're seeing right now with PG&E and Northern California, all the way south through San Diego Gas and Electric and Southern California Edison. So we're talking right now with Portland General, and a lot of our local consortiums in Oregon to try to get this off the ground.
Is Pacific Power involved at this point?
You know, they are to an extent. That's really where we're trying to expand the conversation above Portland General Electric. They're very much interested. We've had a series of meetings with them and looking to move forward.
Okay, more to talk about then in the future for certain on Alert Wildfire, the idea being that it's similar to Shake Alert, just with a different interface and different use, but the idea being to let people know as far in advance as possible of hazards coming, in this case wildfire. In the case of Shake Alert, we're talking earthquake. Leland O'Driscoll is seismic field technician at the Hazards Lab at the University of Oregon and the Shake Alert project manager for the U of O. Thanks for joining us once again on Curious Research Meets Radio.
Thanks for having me.
Good to have you.